From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The debacle of the Trump administration's response to the wife of a slain soldier has ballooned into a symbol of just how inept but also racist this government is. What started out as a battle between Donald Trump and Maisha Johnson over the phone call that the president made when her husband, La David, died in battle in Niger, has now morphed into a secondary war between their proxies, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and House Representative Frederica Wilson. Wilson, a close family friend of the Johnsons, corroborated their account of Trump's insensitive condolence phone call and then became another target herself. Kelly defended Trump's responses to the whole controversy and then attacked Wilson over her conduct at the opening of an FBI field office in 2015, but video of that event revealed that Kelly's account was false. In a tweet over the weekend, Trump also attacked Wilson, saying, quote, "Wacky Congresswoman Wilson is the gift that keeps on giving for the Republican Party, a disaster for Dems." The two white men attacking two black women is sadly indicative of where the U.S. is today. My guest is Arun Gupta, an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's also a contributor to The Intercept and author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and he's a regular news correspondent for Rising Up. Arun just wrote a new piece on Raw Story entitled Race, Lies, and Videotape, John Kelly's Attack on Representative Frederica Wilson is an Attack on Democracy Itself. Welcome to the program, Arun.
Great to be with you today, Sonali.
So first, it seems as though John Kelly was supposed to be the person that brought order to the White House. Now he's engaging in something similar to the kind of attacks that Trump throws and the kind of defensiveness that has marked Trump. Were you surprised by John Kelly's entrance into this whole fray?
I will admit a little bit. You know, I don't think John Kelly is someone to be admired. He's got a rather odious history in terms of Guantanamo, pro-torture, in terms of when he was a general on the U.S. Border, you know, really harsh detention policies. He recently painted Mexico as a collapsing society, you know, really kind of very racially tinged remarks on his part. But nonetheless, he did seem to be trying to tame Donald Trump's worst instincts. But now, you know, we really see when it comes to Trump, for anyone who is around him, if you lie down with the dogs, you get fleas. Kelly's performance was really just reprehensible on many levels. And what I think is interesting is how initially there was favorable reporting of it from the liberal media, like the New York Times, I think, especially. They really flubbed the story. It kind of tried to paint it as this dramatic and emotional defense of Trump and even principles somehow. And yet, when you look at what he says, it tells a very different story.
And then it seems as though Kelly just sort of went overboard in attacking Frederica Wilson. He didn't stick to the issue of the condolence phone call for the slain soldier to his widow. He started attacking something that she apparently did, or in his perception apparently did, taking credit for the funding for a new FBI building in Florida. She's a representative from Florida in 2015. And then, as I mentioned, the video of that event shows nothing of the sort happened that he alleged happened. Why do you think he even made these easily refutable claims?
Well, I think that press conference was, you know, it was a big window into the mind of John Kelly. And it was really, in so many different ways, just absurd and tragic and outrageous and even kind of scary. The first part of it, you know, where he's talking about the procedure by which soldiers are bought back, the remains of dead soldiers. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. He's trying to say what goes on. He talks a bit about his son. And let's remember, it was Trump who politicized this. He's the one one who dragged John Kelly, the death of his son in 2010 in Afghanistan, into this in the first place. But then Kelly just starts to have these just really bizarre moments. He starts to talk about things that used to be sacred in American society, such as women and religion and life and Gold Star families. And I thought that, you know, the one thing that remained sacred was soldiers who died in combat, I'm paraphrasing him, and that, you know, this congresswoman who he went on to call an empty barrel who makes a lot of noise, that she profaned it by being in on the call. Now let's be clear. Kelly was in on the call, so he, as a white man and a general, does not profane being, his presence is perfectly fine. The call is sacred. But if you have a black woman who is a congressional representative who represents members of the family in her district, and she's a longtime family friend, she was principal of an elementary school where LaDavid Johnson's father went as a child. So she's known this family for multiple generations. She helped LaDavid Johnson get into this youth mentorship program. So she's a close friend. She was in the limousine carrying them to the airport when the call comes through. What's she supposed to do? Jump out of the car? So she is in on the phone call, as is Maisha Johnson and her parents, and it is Kelly who's attacking her for listening in and somehow profaning this sacred moment, when the fact of the matter is this is the U.S. president who is supposed to be serving at our behest. The public has a right to know whatever he's doing in his official capacity. Secondly, as a congressional representative, it is only Congress can declare war. So Congress has power over the military. We have civilian authority. Frederica Wilson had every single democratic right, as well as familial right. She is part of the family, to be listening in on that call. So that's the first thing. Then the second thing was that kind of bizarre exposition on what is and isn't no longer sacred in American society, particularly because it's his boss, Donald Trump, who's profaned all of these things. He's the one who made the comments about grabbing women's genitals, who basically has admitted to being a rapist. He hasn't denied paying for abortions of past girlfriends. He's the one who called his, he said it was my Vietnam, trying to avoid sexually transmitted diseases. The guy is a draft dodger. He got into...
he had heel spurs, Arun. He had heel spurs.
Yes, yes, heel spurs, sorry. He attacked Kazir Khan and his wife, another Gold Star family. So here you have Kelly talking about everything that is sacred and that is no longer sacred. And it's his boss who's the one who's profaning everything, yeah. Which is, you know, of course, quite ironic, if not, he's being a hypocrite. And then we have that whole incident where he completely falsely states the incident involving Frederica Wilson and the dedication of the FBI building in South Florida in 2015, accusing her of money grubbing and grandstanding, essentially reviving this kind of Reagan notion of the black welfare queen. And it turned out to be completely untrue. She refuted it right away. And then video surfaced showing she did nothing of the sort and was, in fact, thanking Republicans who helped get the building named after two agents who were killed. So Kelly completely basically does a Donald Trump, attacking her in a false and racist manner.
So you have this war of words between Trump and Maisha Johnson and Kelly and Representative Frederica Wilson. You have two white men from the Trump administration and these two black women who, you know, represent, one of them the widow of a fallen soldier, the other a congresswoman. In so many ways, this story, even though it might be easy to be dismissed as yet more stuff that's distracting us from the real things that Trump is doing, isn't it hugely symbolic of the racial dynamics of our country today?
I think in many ways, it actually is a case study in what the Trump administration is about and what Trumpism represents, this kind of like ideology and force he has brought into being. Look who he tends to attack most viciously. He was attacking the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, you know, a brown woman. His administration was attacking the ESPN reporter, the black woman, for saying what is completely obvious, that this administration is a white supremacist administration. You know, he constantly attacks women and people of color. And I think what, you know, really just riles them up in this kind of almost, you know, atavistic, like, you know, animal way is they get outraged when they see a woman of color who's fighting back, who's demanding rights, who's speaking the truth to them. And so this is, I think, indicative of this white nationalist ideology that, you know, women of color need to be put in the place. It's really quite sinister.
And then, Arun, on the other hand, I also want to talk with you about what is playing out in the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is sort of quietly lining up behind Trump, you know, despite what John McCain might say. He might be the most vocal person against Trump. Most of the Republican Party is uniting behind Trump. One might imagine that the Democratic Party might be uniting behind what Bernie Sanders represents, given that Sanders still is the most popular presidential candidate and most popular politician, rather, in the United States. Instead, what the Democratic Party has recently done, we found out, is sort of purge all of those people who were lining up behind the politics of Sanders and Representative Keith Ellison. The establishment seems to be coming, fighting back. The Clintonites are fighting back at the worst possible moment. What do you make of this?
Well, I think this is something that actually historically marks the Democratic Party, that they are more hostile to modestly radical reforms of the capitalist state than they are to the hard right being in power. You know, they are willing to see the Reagans in power, the Bushes in power, the Trumps in power, then actually undertake the types of reforms that would address serious structural issues of inequality and racism in American society. And of course, those also which affect women so much, because a majority of the working class is now female, right? If you want to say who is the average worker in this country, it would be a woman. So instead of supporting the candidate who is the most popular politician in America, Bernie Sanders, and who's calling for what are really modest reforms, such as single-payer healthcare, such as taxpayer-funded higher education, a Green New Deal, things that would actually make for a better society, that would reduce inequality, improve people's lives. They're stacking the Democratic National Committee with lobbyists, with pro-oil industry figures, and other right-wing figures. This is who the Democratic Party really is. They are a party of Wall Street, just as much as the Republicans. They just represent different economic sectors, you know, such as investment banks, Silicon Valley, and the entertainment industry, i.e. Hollywood.
And so just as Hillary Clinton was unable to defeat the least popular presidential candidate, you know, the easiest to defeat person in modern history, yes, she won the popular vote by 3 million votes, but the margin between the two was far too close than it ought to have been. So now we're seeing, again, the Democratic Party lining up to try to defeat this hugely unpopular move in the U.S. by taking the exactly wrong position, the position that has not won them enough votes to actually gain power. It's just pretty remarkable to me. They've tried to get Bernie Sanders to force, they wanted to force him to try to become a registered Democrat. That failed. And I'm wondering what you think is going to play out in the future with the Democratic Party. Does the party even have a future?
Well, you know, I've always been skeptical of the notion that you can change the Democratic Party from within. I think in the end it was a good thing that Bernie Sanders ran, because he showed the corruption of the Democratic Party and ultimately their fealty to billionaires and lobbyists for the rich. But I think at the same time, for the left, the organized left, to get involved in the Democratic Party, it's pouring your energy into a black hole. Because I pointed out back all the way back in the spring and summer of 2015 that, of course, the Democratic Party is going to rig the primary against Bernie Sanders. They're not stupid. That's what they do. That's what they've always done. So going into 2020, you know, I think where the left and progressives should be putting their power is trying to build independent movements. I think they should be trying to work on electoral politics at the local level. But, you know, it is a pretty dismal state of affairs that we're in currently. I think the Democrats are going to try and do everything. The establishment is going to try and do everything to stop Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination. Hopefully, maybe Elizabeth Warren, who's good on a number of class and issues and also regulation of Wall Street. She looks like she's probably likeliest to get the nomination. But we shouldn't, the left and progressive should not spend too much time worrying about it. What matters, it was someone from the Occupy Wall Street movement, I think, who made one of the most important points about how change works in America. The person told me, it's like, look, elections are about moving candidates. Movements move the whole system. And that's what we need, are powerful independent movements to move the whole system.
Arun, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Raw Story piece on our website. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you, Sonali. Thank you.
Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's a contributor to The Intercept and author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and a regular news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.